Well, good morning. I didn't get the title of this message into the bulletin. It's called I Dream of a Church. Now, when Pastor Darren asked me to preach, he also suggested the topic and then gave me the background notes for the Lenten service. He's chosen to follow. It's loosely based upon a songbook. The primary theme throughout is justice. Now, I hesitated and said, oh, please check with the elders and be sure you know what you're doing. And then he mentioned that Danny, Ellie, and Tom has already done this, so certainly, Doug, you can. Now, how could I resist that challenge? But the songbook. Now, I want to say thank you to John and Jessica for saving this congregation from my singing. At our baptism, we promise to nurture others and are reminded that we are to do that by serving as Christ's representatives in the world. Today, we ask the question, do we as a church look and act like Jesus? Mark Miller, in his song, I Dream of a Church, invites us to dream of a church where justice is flowing with hope and peace growing. My question is, how are we doing? If we are to be Christ's representative, what will we be able to say we did to the least of these when the Son of Man comes in his glory? Well, let's take a little walk through the history of First Church. Now, it's possible I might have plagiarized this idea from a recent youth event, but it could give us an idea of how we might be doing in this Christ's representative thing. Let's go back to 1862. This was a brick church. The pews weren't as nice. And Reverend John Reddick was called to be the pastor. And John, you see, was a strong abolitionist. And this area was known for its copperheads. Not the snake kind, the political kind. For you who don't know, that would be a good Google topic this afternoon. And by 1864, Pastor Reddick was gone. But as Jonah found out, God sometimes moves people from areas of comfort to areas of need. Pastor Reddick wound up in Fort Wayne, where he founded an orphanage. Today, that orphanage is known as Crossroad Homes. We have used it for some of our troubled youth in this church, and we support it generously today. Now we can jump to 1962 a little closer. Last Sunday, Pastor Darren talked about the Biloxi wait-in, the racial strife along the Gulf of Mexico. That's not Galleon's problem. That's a long way from here, so we won't worry about that. But yet in 1958, when a lightning strike affected a construction job and the owner of a local restaurant just east of town was killed and his sister's family came to Galleon to help, and the young lady, Donna, was enrolled in the Galleon schools. Hold it, but she was black. The president of our Board of Education visited the house and suggested she might be happier in Crestline or Mansfield, where people of her own kind were. The family then pulled out a tax receipt and showed him on the tax receipt that Galleon was the district of residence, and Donna was enrolled in school that fall. Was she happily and gratefully accepted? Bluntly, the answer was no. But there was one young girl who sat in these pews who accepted her and walked with her from the high school to the middle school every day for lunch right past this church, and they became friends. And for 60 years, their family have carried on a friendship. Now, Donna has gone on to become a professor of sociology and uses that fall in Galleon as an example. An example one of what hatred and cruelty can be, but more important, what the love of one person can do to overcome that hatred and cruelty. The point of the anecdote is that take seriously the seat in the pew you're sitting, because that does make a difference. Late in the 60s, a different young lady from this church sat in these very pews, became an ordained minister. Not every denomination liked the idea of women in the pews. But that did not deter Stephanie, nor did her sexual preference. The United Church of Christ was and still is one of the few denominations that would accept her. These pews have developed some pretty strong leaders. But one of the difficulties of being an independent church within the United Church of Christ comes when you're looking for a new pastor. Am I right, Nancy? Oh, yes. During such a period when Reverend Isaacs was trying to guide us, a local congregation was struggling with a construction issue. Their sanctuary was torn down and they had no place to worship. Reverend Isaacs encouraged us, and you, in the pews, found space in these pews to invite them and to worship with them in this congregation. A nice example of welcoming the homeless. Thankfully, you finally did find a pastor to preach to the people in the pews. But he was different than some of you wanted or expected. We wanted kind of a hugger, a smiler, who would make us feel good about ourselves. Of course, I wasn't one of the grumblers about him being out of the office fixing things at Temple Hills, being secretary of the Galleon Community Foundation, or chairman of the Ohio Heartland Community Action Center Board, instead of being in our office or visiting people in our congregation. Yes, Pilgrim Hills did need the help. Yes, the Galleon Community Foundation does provide scholarships and grants for the needs of the people in Galleon. And yes, the Community Action Center main and primary goal is to get people off of the rolls of welfare and to become self-sufficient. Was this just a different way of doing what Phil read about this morning? Your support, and again, I'm talking about the people sitting in the pews, made his work possible. Now, in our recent history, a surprising number of people have left your pews to become ordained ministers. Did you know what they would become when they were sitting with you? I, for one, as a den mother to Scott, yes, I was the den mother because the Cub Scouts had no place for a den leader. And yes, I made telephone calls. Yes, I sent a letter. But the certificate still said I was the den mother. Now, I can tell you that Scott was not too interested in tying a double Windsor. He didn't care what a half hitch was. The only craft he cared about was when he could make his car roll down the hill faster. But he was very interested in the treat every week. Did I see Scott as being the pastor of the Granville United Church of Christ today? I can't say I did. Nor those of you who knew Pat Strauch when she was a young child here, did you see Pat becoming a Methodist minister and helping the Iberia Methodist Church stay open? Some of you probably could have guessed Brad would go into the ministry, and yes, he did. And now he's helped a struggling Upper Sandusky and his sister Becky and her husband. They now pastor churches in Western Ohio. You might have seen that. Or what about accepting Rebecca as the youngest and least prepared elder we've ever had? Did you know that you were preparing her for a ministry in St. Louis for the homeless and the poor? Who might be next? I don't know. It scares me. But I will tell you, these pews you're sitting in have been very fruitful. Yet it still took another interim and a new pastor to remind us that there's work here that needs to be done to feed, clothe, and heal. When the last Sunday of the month breakfast was discussed and suggested during the February's leader retreat 4 years ago, well, in the pews, we heard quite a few, well, we'll see how long this lasts. That tadpole swam to shore, grew legs, and is doing quite well, thank you. And we've even changed our Sunday services. We now have a Saturday night service where the worshipers share a meal. I wonder where I've read that before. Perhaps this is just Act One. I wonder how that tadpole will be doing in a few years. You say, okay, Doug, enough of the examples, get to the point. But it's hard to connect the points when there are so many empty seats. You see, it's easier to play fill in the blanks. Do you know what would help? If those seven ministers we sent to other places were here working with us. Why, with their families and their relatives, the pews might be more filled in that the ushers would have to go to the balcony to collect the offerings. And the finance committee would happily talk about the miraculous balancing of the budget. We could easily continue the generous work of the mission committee. There would be more people to help deliver the Friday backpacks that we deliver from the Community Action Center to the schools every week to feed those who are on the free and reduced lunch program. We might even increase the number of buckets and, why, the number of kits and blankets we give for the Blanket Sunday. And how about neighbors in need? And we have a great music program here. We're doing a very nice job of keeping Christian music alive, developing the organ so we can work with that. It's a wonderful program, but I don't think John would mind another bass, a couple of sopranos. And I think definitely the school system wouldn't mind having the children who are highly academic and excellent athletes. We wouldn't mind that at all. But you know, that's never been the way it works. The words in Matthew 25 don't allow us to say that since we've raised a few ministers and sent them on their way, we've done our part. It remains for us, still seated in these pews, to heed the message Phil read for us this morning. Do we as a church look and act like Jesus? Do we individual members of this family look and act like Jesus? A lot depends on how we view Jesus. Do we see a dynamic, charismatic leader who pulls us into his work and even tells us where to throw our nets? Do we see the infant who needs fed, cuddled, and loved? Perhaps he's the submissive, allowing himself to be overpowered, tortured, and crucified. Perhaps he is that loving brother just waiting for us to get our act together. This is now an individual challenge. The youth already voted on their image. They like the Good Shepherd. And I've talked about some individuals who've responded in quite unique ways. But it's when we in the pews can sing with all the Christians in the pews and sing in unison, we did it for these, the least important, that justice will flow with hope and peace growing. Please stand and sing our final hymn.